Bucks is here. Good morning to you.
G'day, Kane.
Looking fit.
Oh, mate, I just went to the gym this morning and I feel like I'm 100 years old. My lower back is screaming, but doing something a little bit different after 15 years of nothing.
Well, I'm interested in that. Now, I'm sure.
Because you're a tank, mate.
No, I'm definitely not. You said you're back in the gym lifting weights.
Yeah, no, it's strange. I've had no inclination to do that at all since retirement in 07. But, just doing something different. I think it's good to change it up, and it's as good for the mind as anything. But, yeah, I'm with a group of about six or seven guys that are doing this lifting. I was talking about it with Gary yesterday, and these blokes that are just, you know, real estate agents, yes, or stockbrokers, and I'm getting outlifted easily, and these guys are very proud of themselves.
Are you competitive?
No, okay. I'm not concerned about that as such. I'm just happy to be moving and to do something. But the place is called Gripped. It's down in Paran behind Jam Factory there, and they've, you know, it's a bit of a, there's a subculture that I never knew was there, but, you know, people that are getting there early in the morning. So we're at 6 o'clock, 45 minutes, you hit it, you're out. Bang. Five times a week. It's very different, but it's stimulating. Go for it, mate. You've got to get there.
Bucks, I have not lifted a weight. Retired in 2015. I don't think I've lifted one since.
It's confronting.
As you can tell, and I would be embarrassed.
It is confronting, yeah. But in the end, it's you against yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, even when you're in a football environment, it's you against yourself first and foremost. You just got to be a better, you know, improve yourself incrementally as you go along. And then eventually you've got to go in and you've got to beat the guy that you're playing against or be a part of a team that is going to beat the best. Mm. But it fundamentally starts with you against yourself.
I do love that. Let's talk some footy. It feels like the St Kilda situation is bubbling away. We've spoken about it last night on the television, as did all the football shows, but the Alistair Clarkson, the Brett Ratten contract, now disagreements between players and the bad press that comes with that, and the on-field performance more importantly. Mm. When you're flying, you're 8-3, things are going so well, and then it gets derailed mid-season. Have you got a strategy to how to get that back as a coach and sort of halt that momentum?
Well, there's no doubt that you don't plan to lose three games in a row, especially after, I thought St Kilda exceeded expectations. They definitely exceeded my expectations, and they started the season pretty well, and I thought, well, that was interesting, but I think there's a few elements they're missing out on. I didn't think they had enough intercept defenders, but Battles stood up, Howard stood up. They've actually done really well.
Wilkie's had an
amazing year. So, and they just kept going, and they were playing really good footy against really good teams and winning, you know, their fair share of those. The Brisbane game was dour up there, straight out of the bye. They didn't look like they were going to win, and Brisbane aren't flying either. So that sort of is a bit of a red flag. When you look back, that's a red flag. The Essendon game was poor. Mm. And Sydney, I thought, looked really sharp early. Like, they were up and about, and St Kilda weren't able to find the intensity that we normally expect from them. So what do you do? Then there's a little bit off-field stuff, and then we sort of say, okay, well, the coaches, you've put your flag in the ground about the coach, and you're going to back him up, and then someone mentions Alistair Clarkson, and then the media. Like, this is where you need to acknowledge the media as an influence on your situation, because it does seep in. As much as you try and control the four walls, it does seep in.
So when you say you need to acknowledge the media, what do you mean?
Well, I think we have to acknowledge that it has an impact on momentum, both positive and negative for teams.
So, subconsciously, or you actually address it as
no,
a group?
No, I don't think you address it. I think you just need to be aware that with Twitter and social media as it stands now, I don't think that you can. You've got to be cognizant of the fact that your people, your staff, your players, and their loved ones, their family and friends are going to be a part of this. Of
new
the,
media,
the world,
yeah.
The world, which is the speculation and innuendo, and we're trying to unpack why things are how they are. So Carlton play St Kilda this weekend, and you couldn't have teams at more polar opposite ends of that spectrum, and the media pushes you to one end or the other.
Yeah.
Either things have never been better, they're perfect, everyone's brilliant, couldn't be going any better flying. Or couldn't be any worse. Yeah. And let's find the reasons why things couldn't be are as bad as they can possibly be. So we've got two sides at the opposite ends of the momentum spectrum, mm-hmm. and they've been pushed to polar opposites. That doesn't mean that Carlton are going to win. It does help. It helps because we all like to have good. Our best stuff reflected back to us, and we're all really challenged by our worst being reflected back to us, and that's. To be able to handle that is to understand what the modern environment is, and it's a coaching challenge and it is a character challenge at both ends.
Mm.
Because if you get carried away with yourself in Carlton's shoes, eventually you'll drop off. And if you can't see your value and your qualities when everyone else is telling you that you're bad, well, then you're not going to be able to build yourself out of where you are in St Kilda's shoes.
So from a coaching perspective, how much strategy goes into comments that, you know, I'll paraphrase here, but Brett Radden against the after that St Kilda performance said it was their worst of the year, and he highlighted the 38 tackles and the lack of, you know, the way that they wanted to play. So the strategy to go public with that and you know, your players are listening when you're talking always, and then to not get a response. It feels to me that backfired. Is that you just talking honestly after a game and just calling it as you see it, not thinking about the ramifications of that? Or is that strategic to say, well, if I say this and highlight the lack of physicality and the tackles and our worst performance of the year, I'm going to get a response? What happens when that response doesn't come?
Yeah, well, I thought Sydney were really sharp early in the game. If St Kilda weren't, they didn't come out like pop guns. Mm. They were thereabouts, but I thought Sydney were really sharp. And there was three goals. There was a couple of late goals in that first quarter for Sydney, but it was one goal each for a fair portion of that first quarter.
Yeah,
and at half time it was only 4-2, 16 points of difference. So it wasn't as if there was a huge margin in the game. But the third quarter was where Sydney took a hold and St Kilda could not go with them. So let's break that down. I mean, it wasn't as if St Kilda got blown out of the water early, but as a coach. I think when you're going well and you do have momentum, you have a greater willingness to challenge the top end of your group or the limits of your group because you've been able to find that often enough. So you'll go, no, this is under. Mm. This is under what we're capable of. It's only in retrospect that you look back a week later and go, well, maybe I just needed to build the group. Maybe they needed a little bit more support than a challenge in this situation. Yes. But that's only you can generally only see that in retrospect because with Vossi, you know, so 2 weeks ago Vossi's going nuts at his players saying
do you like that?
Well, I do.
I loved it.
Yeah, but you know that can happen without the cameras catching it too. So we put a greater emphasis on things that we see, and then we go, okay, well this is a pivotal moment. We have just captured here a pivotal moment in the development of this group. Where we're looking at 0.001% of what actually happens.
There's a perception, though, that the new player, it doesn't happen as often, of that real strong feedback.
New coach?
Yeah. So the modern player,
yeah.
There's a perception that they can't handle it like they used to.
Well, there's no doubt the coaching environment has changed, and it's less fire and brimstone, and it's more teaching.
Mm.
So... That does happen less often. So when we see it, when it pops up out of the surface, it's still there. But when it pops up out of the surface, we go, "Oh wow, you know, that's exceptional."
Mm.
And it's probably not exceptional, but we've captured a moment, and then we put greater significance on it because we can see it, and because we all talk about it. But if you go back to that and you go, "Okay, so Vossi's he drew a line in the sand and said, look, we're going well, but that third quarter is not acceptable." Not where and we're paraphrasing here, and we're assuming what he said too. He might have just had a bad day, but he's put his line in the sand. He goes, "No, I largely to the point of I would suspect it would be we're better than this.
Mm.
We've fallen asleep. We've gone away from X, Y, Z things that we know make us great. So that's what we're going to focus on the next 30 minutes. Simplify it. Bang, bang, bang. Because when we do that, that's where." And that takes effort and it takes energy and it takes all of us. So let's see what we can do with that. So then Carlton go, finish the game off well, have a couple of other good performances. You can go back and say, well, that was a
moment.
Catalytic moment. And it might have been. They've put their most significant sort of four-quarter performance together, in Vossi's words, last week against Fremantle. Mm. Just the same way as you go back and go, okay, well, Rat's challenging his group and saying that the energy wasn't there and we need to be better, and then you get a pop gun, potentially a pop gun response. You go, okay, well, maybe he pulled the wrong trigger. But it's they're moments that we're putting significance on that may or may not have been the difference, because there's, you know, out of the 24/7 cycle, we're talking about a 20 second comment or a 30 second moment, and moments are significant, but potentially we put greater significance on them because we don't see the whole raft of actions that take place.
Nathan Buckley is in the studio. We're talking about the Saints and their plight at the moment. I just want to ask you one more thing on St Kilda before we move on to some other matters. You're in the coach's box, or you're coaching from ground level, and your team is just struggling to move the footy from defensive half, and that was highlighted on the call. I think you were in the Fox Footy Studios. You would have been watching as well. It just stood out. They just couldn't move the football either. Sydney had a plan to shut them down, and St Kilda had no method with how they wanted to transition the ball, and it was all long down the line, straight lines, and nothing threatening. That wouldn't have been the plan going in.
Now, Brett Ratton is one of the more aggressive coaches. He wants his player to take it on. So did you think that Sydney defended particularly well?
Yeah, I thought they... Well, it's really difficult just from on the TV screen, but when you get the behind-the-goal shots, you're like, well, I actually don't know where you would go with the ball there. They're either too slow, and Sinclair gets shut down. Brad Hill's not in the side, so your personnel gets taken out of it a little bit. But my question is, when you're in the box and that's happening, is it impossible to change it mid-game? Like, well, what can you do? Is game day coaching, in essence, a little bit overrated with that work is done in the preseason, in the lead-up to the game, and there's not a lot you can do mid-game to change that?
Or the avenue that Ratton has had, and that St Kilda have had often, is move Brad Hill.
Yeah.
So he didn't have that lever to pull.
He wasn't there, and Sinclair was shut down.
And that was, even that's good coaching. So if Brad Hill's not in the side, and I mean, obviously he's high forward, but has obviously played wing and high back, that gives them that bounce at times. Ben Long has played that role periodically, but Sinclair's been the most consistent guy. So if you're missing one, and then that just means if you can cut the head off that guy who's going to give them the bounce. And St Kilda rely on, you know, that aggressive early ball movement, which is clean hands inside first and foremost. You need to execute a couple of handballs to get a player out in space, and then your game speeds up off that. Sydney were too strong inside. They were too good at winning that. I think Sydney, when I see them do this, which is clean hands, bang, 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 and they're out, they're as sharp as anyone when they get going, and they look like they're on to me early. So that was always going to be a tough game for St Kilda to win, given the Sydney that we saw turn up.
Yeah.
But yes, the intent to go is one thing, and then the execution of that is another, because if you don't put two or three possessions together, you can have the intent of going quickly, but there's no efficiency, and then you become dour because you just can't put chains of – or the opposition's pressure's good, and you can't put chains of possessions together to put what looks like an organised offence and an intent to go. St Kilda will try and go really fast against Carlton, and they'll take the game on, and we'll see trigger hands, and we'll see them trying to cover lines. Now, whether that actually lasts to our eye – and whether it's sustainable will be a matter of executing their plans, and not just the intent of it, but the execution of it.
The other team that's under pressure and have been all year is Essendon. We've been speaking a little bit about coaching strategy and what you say publicly versus what you say behind closed doors. It was a couple of weeks ago that Ben Rutten challenged Jake Stringer or was pretty open and honest about the game that he had played and said that it was poor and he needed to be better. Mm. The report was that Jake Stringer wasn't happy with that, and he'd spoken to Ben Rutten about that. Now, Ben was asked after the game about it. He wouldn't divulge clearly what was said behind closed doors. But once again, the strategy to publicly challenge one of your players versus doing it behind closed doors. So last night we had the discussion, Hutchie saying, well, Chris Scott wouldn't do that publicly, or Damien Hardwick wouldn't challenge one of his better players publicly. I had no issue with it. What is going through your mind as a coach when you think about doing that publicly versus challenging the behaviour and the performance behind closed doors?
I think the general rule of thumb is to have the hard conversations in private and to support in public. I think that's the general rule of thumb. Coaches are human, and they feel the pressure and the expectation as much as anyone does. And we're emotional beings. When you're in the cut and thrust, and if it doesn't mean something to you, well, then you're not in the right place. So you have a drive, you have an ambition, and you want to succeed. So when you're not getting that performance, you carry that with you. The senior coach probably carries it, or definitely carries it more than anyone, more than any of the players even, because he feels responsible for every single person, every single play, quarter, you know, win and loss. So if he sees, and I'm speculating here, but if he sees a player that he feels that has the gap between what their best is and what we're producing at the moment, and we've had these conversations and we're trying to cajole him along, and it might be a very conscious thing to say, well, the next challenge is to publicly rebuke. And that might have been the 10th step along the way. But it's, you know, I'm gonna try and prickle him here, prickle his ego, and challenge him publicly. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to work, but it might be the last resort before being dropped, for instance.
Let's have a listen to Ben Rutten after the game. He was asked about that and the feedback he gave to Jake Stringer and how their relationship is now.
Yeah, Jake's okay, yeah. I mean, Jake's, we've got a good relationship with him. It's about getting him back to his best footy, which we know he can play.
So there's no regrets about the way you sort of handled that, like you'd do it again if asked the question in press conference?
Yeah.
Did you actually have a chat to him during the week? Did you actually sit down through it? Yeah. What came of that?
Well, that's for me, Jake, to work through.
Yeah, as I said, I didn't have a major issue with the way that he handled that across the board, Ben Rutten. Did you ever say anything, I'm asking you a question without notice here, but publicly that a player was unhappy with and you felt like you erred speaking publicly about a performance and then that player, it may have damaged the relationship between you and him or...
Nothing that comes to mind. I think as a young coach, I think you are more... And you learn as you go along, but I think you're probably... You probably feel like you're entitled to speak more publicly around to challenge a player. The one that I only spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. So there's one where I came down out of the box and physically grabbed Jared Witts and
That's
shook
right.
him. And there was some conversations that came out of that, and that was largely my. It was very conscious and very measured in terms of wanting to get down and see Witsy, because we'd had conversations along about just believing in himself and being the aggressive player that he had in him, but he plays it as a young man, played a little bit like a teddy bear, just not with that lack of confidence and belief about himself, and he's still growing into his body too, big body to grow into, and it was a little bit about mate, this is the aggression, you know, what we just saw then, we can't have that. You know that you're better than that. So it was very public. So there was, and it's not dissimilar to a coach talking, you know, so Rutten having a crack at Stringer. So there was some unpacking to do there. And to say, like, to the question was, did
unpacking publicly or personally with him?
Well, really, it's here. It's one on one first. I mean, that's the main point here is the relationship between player and coach, player to player, coach to coach. I mean, they're the relationships that matter. What's happening externally? People can have their opinion of what they've seen, and they can have opinion of right or wrong. But without the context that the two people that are in that relationship have.
Yeah.
That's largely irrelevant, but you need to acknowledge it because in this modern world, this is what it is. So Witsy would have got a whole heap of questions from his mum and dad, from his mates, from teammates, like what went on there. Like you got to answer all those questions. Yeah. So it's a very real thing when there is vision of it or when people don't have all of the context. But so for Witsy and I, it was to sit down and speak about it. And I apologise that it was so public, but. That's like a faux apology, isn't it?
It's a faking.
A fake apology. But I mean, I wouldn't have been as concerned about it if it wasn't caught on camera, and I reckon we would have had to have done to check in on each other, and me to check in on Mitzi first and foremost, would have been different if it wasn't caught in vision.
Would you have done that to? Was it knowing your player?
Would that not
have worked with some others at Collingwood at the time that might have been a bit more sensitive to
and,
it?
And I think that's part of it as well. So if Essendon, for whatever reason, over the last three or four weeks, had turned their form around, and I'm not sure that Jake Stringer would be a part of it, but he's not all of it. Mm. There's plenty of other things that aren't necessarily working the way that they would like it to work. But we sort of, like, if you're in a winning, so if Chris Scott does do it, or if Damien Hardwick does have a crack at someone, or right now if Vossie gets nuts, it's like, because the momentum's going well and because you're winning through it, you're the guru, you are the doyen. Yeah. If it's not, if you're not getting the end result and you're not getting the chemistry right in your group and you feel like you're not meeting expectations, well, then you're clearly flawed. So the truth is somewhere in between. We create these martyrs. And we create, and often senior coaches are the ones. They're either martyrs and they're messiahs, or they're just no good. the reality is always somewhere in between. And we try to unpack and get to the nth on it at all. But what I would say is that Jake Stringer's got a chance to answer for his form and his energy. So we've spoken around it, but the
responsibility is on the player.
The central point is that Jake Stringer is not displaying the intensity or the attitude that is going to help him play at his best and help his team win.
And that is absolutely spot on. Our next guest is a key part of SEN's coverage of the Sri Lanka versus Australia test, which starts tomorrow from 2 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. It's live on SEN Fanatic, on the SEN app, all the SEN networks to join across the day. Adam Collins, Jeff Lemon, Russell Arnold, Bharat Sundaresan, Jeremy Cooney and the team for every ball of the series live from Gaul. Thanks to Henley Holmes delivering affordability, and a key part of that. In fact, he could be the leader of the team, joins us now. Bharat, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Ken. And I don't know how you know this. I am the leader of the group. We are in the subcontinent. And, you know, I've been bossing the boys around, this week. And that's why I came a little early as well. Like, you know, went to Colombo, got a lay of the land, and, we're all set.
So what are your responsibilities as leader? I mean, someone gets you the coffees, you decide the first ball lineup and things like that?
To start with, we're all staying within Golf Fort, and actually, to be honest, it's pretty sad. Generally, it's buzzing with a lot of tourists, but it's not the same. A lot of businesses are struggling. Yes, the first thing I've said, every night we're going to a different place for drinks and dinner. So, you know, I decide where we go, and then they just follow suit, which is how it should be.
Excellent.
As well. But nobody's been getting me coffees yet, so thanks for that. I will get them doing that.
A lot of responsibility comes with that. Take us through the preparations. Bit of carnage with the Aussies. Are they going to play a second spinner? Who's it going to be? The health of the squad. Travis Head out, Glenn Maxwell in. But give us your perspective on how the build-up has been for our Aussies.
Firstly, you know, just coming through that one-day series, a lot of the batters used the one-day series because the pitches towards the end of it were turning a lot. I mean, they were turning square in Colombo. So the likes of Warner and Manus and even Cameron Green, they were almost using the time spent in the middle as with one eye on the test series, if that makes sense. Yes, different format, different color of ball. But seriously, that's where it started. And even while the one-days were going on, Steve Smith and Usman Khawaja were in the background at the Premadasa, just having really long nets. Injuries have kind of dictated the fact that we still don't have a playing 11 or even a playing 12 for that matter. Mm. So it now depends on Travis Head. Andrew McDonald spoke yesterday and said Travis Head's fitness could kind of tell them which kind of configuration they want to go in with. But two spinners will definitely play, and it's Who would have thought that John Holland would be spoken of as a test player in 2022? But it looks very likely that he plays. And, you know, even during the white ball stuff, they were getting an injury and are literally the Australians. And it's happened now. And John Holland seems to have some issues with his finger, the spinning finger. So we'll have to wait and watch if he gets a bowl in. He did not touch the ball yesterday. They've kept him in cotton wool, just like they have a lot of players throughout this tour. So if he's fit, he plays ahead of Mitchell Swepson, is what we've been told. Glenn Maxwell, well, it still really depends on Travis Head. He batted and bowled and ran around Travis Head yesterday. So you think that as the incumbent, they would stick with him. But you never know. We'll have to wait and watch. I mean, again, Glenn Maxwell and John Holland playing Test cricket in 2022 would just sum up this tour.
It would, and it's a bit concerning, the health of the squad, with the amount of Test cricket and just the cricket schedule really over the coming 2 years that Australia face and the travel, and they're already starting to break down. But I want to ask you about Glenn because, I mean, he's going to turn 34 shortly. He hasn't played Test cricket for 5 years. He's played the seven Tests, but we'd love to see it, I mean, because of the entertainment factor, and he plays spin so well in those conditions. So do you think he has the technique and the ability and I guess the discipline to succeed now with the experience that he's got?
You know, he spoke to just a couple of us who were here during the one day, the day he was his test recall was announced. And honestly, I've never seen a cricketer happier. Mm. It was more just this unbridled happiness more than just relief that he's back. You could see, and he said it to you as well, that he's been waiting for this opportunity. And there was a time in 2018 when he said, when he wasn't picked for either the Australia or the Australia squads to the UAE. This is in the wake of the whole Cape Town, scenes with ball tampering, where there were lots of vacancies in the middle order. And when they didn't pick him, he felt that his time had come and gone. And he hasn't played a first-class match for the last 2 years and 9 months. But just looking at him in the nets, even the last couple of days facing the red ball, and just his body language, I think he's ready. And he wants to make the most of this unexpected opportunity to play Test cricket again. So if he does get a go, I have no doubt that he will do really well. He's really hungry. He could play that game breaker role in the middle order. The way Test cricket plays out in South Sri Lanka, especially in Goa, is things happen quickly. So you need someone like Glenn Maxwell who can just come and, you know, score really quickly. Or, you know, even with his bowling, he adds such balance to the side. So it'll be interesting to see, if he does get the look in. But as far as he goes, he is ready.
And the conditions, the pitch, it's clearly going to turn.
It will turn, yeah. I mean, quick games are the best game, especially when you have a lot of laundry to do. It already looks dry. I mean, it's always fascinating watching the Sri Lankan ground staff go about their business in the days leading up to the test. And you can clearly see everything else get watered, but they make sure that not even a single drop goes near the pitch. I mean, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but it will be a dry pitch. It will break up very, very soon. And that's how it's been in Goa, not all around Sri Lanka, but especially in Goa. The spinners come into play very early, and it's quick turn. Like what we saw in Pakistan is the pitch breaking down eventually and the ball is beginning to turn. As a batter, you have a lot of time to just play it off the back foot. Here, you know, like you have to play brave cricket. And there will be times when you'll have to take on the spinners. You can't play the long game. The game will just, catch up with you. So it makes for fascinating cricket. It's different to what we're used to in Australia or even in other parts of the subcontinent. Nathan Lyon will not be complaining about the pitches.
All right, well, it's exciting. Can't wait to see the Aussies back in action. You will be all over it. We appreciate the update. Can I get your prediction, firstly? Who wins?
I think Australia go in as favourites. They'll have to play pretty... They'll have to play pretty poorly to lose the series. It's a young Sri Lankan side. I mean, there's some experience in the batting. But, you know, Australia have more or less the firepower you need to win here. But the more easier prediction is whether we will see day four in either of these two tests.
Mm.
And if we don't, at least in the first test, it means I'll have more decisions to make, Kane. I'll have to pick lunch places and
exactly
dinner places.
Right.
So that's what I'm...
All the important decisions. Brat, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the cricket. Can't wait to tune in.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
The Aussies in action tomorrow. Wait and see how that final 11 takes shape as the toss gets a little bit closer.